Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Kenny Hodge Postal Podcast.
Hey, good evening, podcast audience. This is the KHPP, and tonight we're doing a special real world OWCP podcast with a gentleman who I originated my OWCP podcast with, Robert Frost. This is a little special edition that we're doing tonight because usually I've got a member from Federal Injury Centers, Tom Giempa, or Chris Helms or Jeannie on the show with me. But tonight I'm just going to share with you the experience that a current mail handler had to go through or went through to get his claim accepted. Hey, good evening, Rob. How you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like I said, you and I started this OWCP podcast before I met Chris and Jeannie. So we really go back like Lexus seats. yeah, we did. So, but before we get started, Robin, and you take us through what you went through, let me just open the show with a little bit of 541, section 541 out of Elm 52, which is the Employee Labor Relations Manual. And I'm going to take about 3 or 4 minutes because it is important that postal employees understand. In the Elm, that's a postal manual. In the Elm, let me tell you that under the section 541, under the provisions of Postal Regulations Act, all employees of the United States Postal Service are covered by the Federal Employees Compensation Act, which is called FECA. And let me tell you, FECA is no joke. Everybody's not covered under FECA. FECA is administered by the Office of Workers' Compensation Program, OWCP. FECA provides that employees who suffer job-related disabilities are entitled to continuation of pay for the period of the disability, compensation for wages lost as a result of job-related injuries, and medical care for disabilities due to personal injuries or diseases approximately caused or aggravated or accelerated by postal employment. Now, I'm going to let that be a motif on all my injury compensation podcasts, because you got to understand this. You are entitled to this, and sometimes you got to fight a little harder for what you're entitled to because they don't always just give it to you. So without further ado, hey, Rob, go ahead and take us through the process or some of the things that you had to go through to get your injury accepted and validated so that you could get proper treatment.
Okay. A little information first, and then I'll go into the details. All right. When you're dealing with the OWCP, you have to be patient. But that patience should only extend so far. And you'll understand what I mean by that when I get into my details. Now I'm going to briefly walk through my personal experiences of the last 10 months. I was injured on October 2nd, 2021. And the last 10 months have been a pain. to say that's to put a
police, right?
All right. Now, there's actions you need to take anytime you deal with the OWCP. All right. You have to file a timely CA-1 for traumatic injuries, meaning there was an accident at work and you got hurt right then. That's traumatic. Okay. You've got up to 3 years to file it. But the sooner you file it, the better off for you. The other option is a CA-2, which is basically covers anything else. If you're out playing basketball and you get hurt, and a few months later your injury flares up, it's covered. You file a CA-2 stating that your job duties are aggravating that pre-existing condition. And workers' comp, most of the time, as long as you've got proper documentation, will pay you for that. Or at least pay for your treatment. There's a distinct difference there. If your injuries are severe enough, you might receive a CA-17, which is job duty restrictions, which come from your physician. Follow those restrictions. I don't care what management says. Follow those restrictions. If you don't, workers' comp can deny your claim. And then also, if you don't follow them, management can fire you. Now, when you file any claim, you're going to receive one of two types of documents from workers' comp, usually within 30 days of filing. You'll either receive a letter stating your claim has been approved for certain conditions. They may not approve all of them, but at least you'll get it's approved for one or more. Or you'll receive a letter stating that something is missing. This is not a denial letter. It's a request for clarification, which means usually your doctor made one or more errors when they've completed the CA-20, which they have to submit to workers' comp. All right? So workers' comp gives you up to 30 days, depending on the type of injury, to get that clarification sent to them. Get with your doctor. Give your doctor a copy of that letter so he can see exactly what he needs to fix, because workers' comp tells them what needs to be fixed when they send you that letter. All right? And then every week, you call your doctor and follow up and see if he's made the corrections and submitted the paperwork. Doctors, even doctors who are familiar with workers' comp and basically base their livelihood on it, hate dealing with workers' comp. They hate it because they have to be specific, and doctors don't want to be specific. It is your responsibility. I cannot stress that enough. It is your responsibility to ensure your doctor and the workers' comp case examiner work together to get your claim approved. Basically, carry a club around and beat them until they do what they're supposed to do. Now, approximately 4 months ago, around February or March of 2022, workers' comp reorganized to streamline their organization. The intent was to improve their customer relations and get claims approved faster.
That was the intent. Okay.
That was the intent. That is not what happened. They did away with the regional offices and placed all the case examiners under one umbrella. All cases were redistributed and assigned by alphabetical order. So, for example, if your case examiner was in Cleveland, Ohio, your new case examiner, like mine, may be in Nevada somewhere. And to say that all case examiners are the same is a falsehood. I had an absolutely outstanding case examiner after I got one fired, another one got transferred because I complained so much because they weren't doing the job, which, by the way, you can no longer do. You can file a complaint, and you should if your case examiner is not doing the job. But you can't get them fired, and you can't get them replaced. You're stuck with whoever they assigned you. Basically, you're going to receive a letter, as I said. At the bottom of that letter is a phone number. Your location may be different from mine, so I'm not going to read it off because I don't want to confuse you. If you're having issues with your case examiner, for example, in the 10 months that I have dealt with this particular case examiner, I have called her 16 times. She actually picked up the phone once and denied everything I asked for. And then she actually called me back once out of 16 times. They're supposed to call you back within 48 hours. That's a requirement. If they don't
let me ask you a question, Rob. Do you think that it's because of the caseload? Or I mean, I'm not trying to put anybody on center stage because I'm probably going to need these folks one day. Or is it a case of just the bad time management?
It is a combination, I believe it really is. I believe it's the case. Excuse me, caseload, because like every other business, workers' comp 2020. Lost about, I think they lost almost a third of their case examiners. All right. They haven't been able to replace them. All right. Last month, they did a mass hiring and hired 200 new case examiners. That's how desperate they are for people. But it's also a case of apathy. the new case manager or case examiner, excuse me, many of them don't care. And in my case examiner does not care. So at any rate, they have 48 hours to call you back. If they don't call you, call them back. Leave the same message. Okay? I would give them 3 attempts to reach them, and they don't call back before you file a complaint. Now, I'm a little slower to complain. I don't like to get people in trouble. Then it takes a lot to push
it. I see that going another way, Rob, but go ahead, man. I thought you were going to finish that differently, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, and I can go that way, too.
No,
once you push my trigger,
okay.
Watch out.
Yeah, but let me ask you a question though. When you talk about your claims examiner, you see that's one of the aspects I really dig about Chris and Jeannie Helms at a Federal Injury Center, because they're with you through that whole process. But when you talk about a claims examiner, what kind of actions would a individual who filed a claim? I mean, what kind of things would you go through before you start to realize that, hey, this person just don't care? You know, I'm hurt. They're not processing my paperwork. How long did it take you to realize that whoever was your claim examiner at that time just wasn't doing what was supposed to be done?
Well, I'm an old hand with dealing with workers' comp because my first injury occurred in 2016.
Okay.
I'm permanently disabled because of that injury, and now I have a new one. So... for me, the third time she didn't call back told me right then she didn't care. It's not that she was overloaded or anything, because they have days that are supposed to be set aside just to call you back.
Okay. All right. So sound like before you complained, you did some research and investigation, and I really like that about you. Sometimes when you do research and investigation, you find out that you really have no reason to complain. But if she's not calling you back and you research and find out that they're set up, that there's certain time allocated for callbacks, then, yeah, I'm going to get a little upset also. But
yeah.
But let me ask you, if I was just – go ahead. I'm sorry, Rob.
I was going to say, my case examiner before this new one was fantastic. He called me back usually within 24 hours. If he did not have an answer for my question right then, he would research the answer and call me back as soon as he got the answer. I loved him. He was great. I did not always like what he told me.
Okay. All
because,
right. And that's what,
you know, I was under certain impressions, and he clarified the fact that, no, that was a misconception. I didn't like that, but, you know, he was upfront and honest with me all the time, so I took it and went with it. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, sometimes they're going to tell you things that you don't want to hear because there are rules they do have to follow. All right. And they can't just willy-nilly approve your claim and then things like surgery and stuff when it isn't really warranted. What were you going to say, Ken?
Nothing. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You're good.
Okay. My surgery should have been approved no later than January of 2022, because in my case, workers' comp ordered me to go to see a second opinion doctor that worked for them to prove that either A, I could work, or I had a legitimate injury. Okay. And this was before I even had an MRI done. So
wow.
All they had to base that second opinion on was the physical examination he put me through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Even without that MRI, he told workers' comp 3 times in his letter to them that I needed surgery.
And why did it take
my
3 times?
Exam, 3 times in the same letter, because that's the way they have to fill the forms out for workers' comp. They have to do it 3 times in the same letter. If they don't do it all 3 times, workers' comp is going to deny it. Everything has to match each time he does it.
Okay.
So my case examiner stated that my original diagnosis of strain of the bicep muscle had worked itself out because it was more than 6 weeks, and that's all workers' comp will give you for a strain or a sprain. Right? But the second opinion doctor clearly stated I had a torn rotator cuff and possibly other injury. And then a month later, when I actually got the MRI results to him, he amended that, stating unequivocally he has a full tear of his right rotator cuff and adhesive capsulitis, which means the muscles are forming little cysts, which causes the muscle to lock up and be difficult to move. Right there said surgery. That because about 50% of the time, the adhesive capsulitis requires surgery. The other 50%, they usually work on it as you're getting the rotator cuff repaired. And that could be just physically taking the arm and yanking it all over the place while you're sedated, or actually going in and cutting the cysts out. Depends on the doctor.
So, but while you're going through all of this, what is the post office doing for you as far as work hours, and are they making work available for you?
Yes. They changed my 2 p.m. start time to 1:30 a.m. Put me out on the dock scanning placards because they said that was the only position they had available within my restrictions, which wasn't true.
No, and let me say this to you. You being a mail handler, so I'm going to just kind of speak to that mail handler union from the local on down. See, this is the kind of things that a strong union presence will stop. See, a strong union president will have meetings with these plan managers and let them know, listen, you're obligated to put these folks, when I say these folks, if you've been hurt at work, you're obligated to keep them on their tour. Now, don't get me wrong. A title behind your name when you're addressing the plan manager as local president carries weight. And when local presidents come out to plants and say, tell and remind plant managers that you have an obligation here, and this is not really a request, it's an obligation to make work for mail handlers who got hurt at work. And that's not happening. And when they do the sleight of hand movement, well, we'll make work, but I'm going to disrupt your life schedule and move you from tour two and put you on tour one because we say we're making work. Knowledgeable, strong union presidents will stop that. I'm sorry, Rob. Go ahead. I had to get on that soapbox just for a minute.
Well, I'm going to jump on it too. Two comments. First of all, the ELM does specifically state management is supposed to, or I should say should, make every effort to keep you on your tour. They do not have to.
Well, once but again,
a 12-hour, 11.5, 12-hour shift in time is not.
But you have to remember, when we talk about what the ELM is stating there, disrupting your life cycle, it's not part of what's supposed to be happening. They want to keep you as close to permanent, I mean, as close to what you've always done. That is part of your rehabilitation process. If I'm trying to redo rehabilitation, and now I move you from an 8 o'clock in the morning start to an 11:30 at night start, well, after I rehabilitate your injury, now I've got to do mental rehabilitation. I don't know why that word ain't coming out. I got to do mental rehabilitation on you for your mental stress now. So, again, that's a part of the process that the post office has put in place, but management don't seem to care about. If you're hurt at work, we want to, and again, bend over backwards if necessary, to keep you on your schedule so we don't have any further disruption to your life while we rehabilitate you back to 100%. That's the concept of what OWCP means in the United States Postal Service. And that's the concept of what Section 500s in your ELM and the 540s talk about. But for some reason, postal management won't adhere to it. And postal unions are not stepping up with enough intellect and aggression to make them conform to that?
Well, I'll give you an example of what I was told. And this is a direct quote when I went to a union representative. You're an injured worker. We don't do anything for you.
You see, listen, only because you and I both work at Citygate, I can just imagine which one of the which one of the stewards might have said that to you. So we're going to do me a favor, okay? I'm on nothing but positive energy right now, so we're not going to talk about our branch right now. So let's talk about another branch, okay? But I don't really want to discuss our branch right now because I just want to share with our audience some of the things that go on with injury compensation. Because see.
Let me come back on my little wagon here.
Yeah, where were we?
All right. If any time you call the Office of Workers' Compensation, there's about a 98% chance you're going to have to leave a message. Follow those instructions carefully. Leave your name, your claim number, if you have one, your telephone number, and your message. And then the next step is absolutely vital. Press the pound key. If you don't press the pound key, that phone system will not save your message. Your case examiner will never receive it.
And you know, Rob, that sounds like something of no significance on a normal conversation. But listen to me, podcast audience, when you're dealing with OWCP, again, the system will work. But as I was saying to Robert before the show started, you're going to have to work it. So when they give you these little exact nuances, you got to follow them to the T. And I know you might think, okay, I left a message, but I didn't push pound. I just hung up. Every other voicemail sends it. No, if that's what they're saying to do, then it's important that you follow these little nuances, because if not, it's just going to delay the processing of your claim.
And any response you'd be expecting, because if you did not press the pound key, they don't get it. They don't know you have an issue. So make sure you press that key. Out of my 16 calls, I know I did not press it twice. I realized it as soon as I hung up, and then I had to call back and press the pound key.
Okay.
So, after 16, well, actually, it was after 15 attempts to reach my case examiner, I filed a formal complaint by calling the phone number on my letter. And the person who answered the phone initially started to say she couldn't help me. I needed to speak with my case examiner. You need to clarify right away that, A, you're calling to file a complaint about that case examiner. From that point on, they're going to be very willing to help you. Right, you must make sure when they read back everything, every note that they took to you before you hang up, that they got it exactly the way you said it. Before you make the call, make a list of everything you want to talk about and make sure that person on the other end reads back your list verbatim. That means exactly, because you don't want workers' comp to find a way to push something aside because you weren't clear. You do have to be clear with them. And usually within 48 hours, you're going to receive a call from a workers' comp supervisor. Now, the supervisors are human. They don't want to believe their case examiners are screwing up. But they will be polite. They will ask you to go over all of your complaints or your questions. They will answer the questions for you. And again, they may not give you an answer you want to hear. They do have laws they have to follow. All right. Be truthful. Mm-hmm. If you leave a message or send a letter, everything you put in that has to be factual. If you stretch the truth a little, you are in violation of falsifying a government document. That could be up to $15,000 fine and 5 years in prison, or both. And if that happens, it's a felony, you lose your post office job and will never work in any government job again, not even for the city. All right? Don't take that chance. Be factual. All right? Try to control your anger, because you are going to be angry. You're going to be frustrated. Try to be polite. These people are going to try to help you. Now, in my case, I got the supervisor called me back, and we went through everything. I had to clarify a couple of things, because somehow in transfer from one place to another, part of the message got garbled. But the supervisor took all of my concerns, wrote them down, and then said, I will have this taken care of. And not only that, she went back through my previous claim and found various areas where someone had made an error and I was owed more money.
Okay. Sometimes it works out. That's great.
Yes. I still had issues, because the supervisor said, Mr. Frost, based on just what the second opinion doctor said, not your follow-up doctor, what the second opinion doctor said, I'm approving your surgery for the rotator cuff tear and adhesive capsulitis. I'm not going to approve anything else, but I will approve it for those two based on that. And my follow-up doctor listed two more things that he wanted me, my case to be upgraded for. She said, give me a week, because I'm actually out of town right now on vacation. She called me on her vacation.
Wow, that's awesome.
And, she needed a week to get back to get a message to the case examiner. So I gave her 2 weeks, and then I received a letter from Workers' Comp. It said, your condition of bicep strain or sprain has been changed to shoulder strain or sprain. No mention of surgery. No mention of rotator cuff or adhesive capsulitis. So I politely called my case examiner and said, look, your supervisor said this was approved. Why are you not approving it? And, of course, I had to leave a message. Well, my case examiner was out of the office for a week. That same supervisor called me back and apologized profusely, because now she knows her case examiner really is screwing the pooch. Because she made a liar out of the supervisor. The supervisor promised me this would be taken care of, and it was not. And she read me what she was going to say to that case examiner, and she ripped her a new one. And basically told her, get it approved.
Okay, so because they made a early judgment or incorrect judgment or unauthorized judgment, the supervisor made her go back and make it valid?
Yes. But she didn't make it valid the way she was supposed to. So now the supervisor went back and chewed her out and made her do it properly. And now I do have a document from Workers' Comp approving the rotator cuff and adhesive capsulitis repairs.
Okay. So listen, we got about 90 seconds to bring this podcast to a halt today. But so we got injured at work, and through being through staying on top of it, following up and supplying all the information that's requested, you got approved, and you, even though the post office moved you in a manner that I think violates the ELM, violates the principle of what rehabilitation is all about, they allowed you to work. So would we say, just based on right now, that being injured at work, we went through the process and the process worked?
As far as workers' comp, yes. Post office, no.
Well, the post office is never going to work. Again, if you're not tenacious about anything, I mean, I don't care what it is, anything involving the post office, if you don't stay on top of it, it's never going to work, because I don't know. That's just how they roll. Hey, but listen, I appreciate you stopping by. Coming back by our little OWCP chat and sharing a world experience with our podcast audience. Hey, have a nice evening, Rob, and we'll continue this next week.
All right. Thank you, Ken.
All right. I'll talk to you.
Yep. Bye.
Boy.
Nice everywhere.
You want to podcast while you're here? You want to go downstairs? We can talk about Uvalde, or we can talk about gun laws, man. Oh, we don't have to.
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
Today.
Monday.
We
got to
do it, though. We've got so many things.
We're here right now. But we can do it tomorrow. Don't Wednesday. We're going to do it Wednesday. I'm going to book time in here. I'm going to book studio time. We're going to be in the studio from 9 to 11.
And nobody's coming in here, right?
No. What for?
Was there somebody coming this week?
We were talking thinking about it, but no, I'm going to sit and do that.
You want to turn off your equipment?
Yes. Since we're not going to use it.
I think it's just the data.